From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk mistakes. Mistakes that aren't really mistakes, even though a whole lot of people will tell you you've made a mistake. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Kathy Petras, hello. You are there at your home in Armenia, Spain. Ross Petras, hello to you at your home in Toronto. The two of you are looking fresh and bright and clear to me this morning. Not that anybody listening can tell that, but both of your camera pictures just look wonderful to me this morning.
Thank you, Fletcher. I'm so proud of myself. I bought a nice little lens cleaner and I used it today on my glasses. And...
It's a rich life. It's a rich life.
Well, we got more listener emails, which is fantastic, and we think we'll jump off with one of those today. We got an email from Albert, who had a question that addresses something that we talked about a while back, maybe a year or two ago, and it's something that I certainly didn't know really before the two of you told me about it.
It's something that, as you said, we've brought up and that a lot of people talk about. What he wrote was, it was back during right after the debate, and he said, "This may fit somewhere in your analyses of the way we talk nowadays. I was struck by the way Trump said in the debate, they're eating the pets of the people that live there. It seems to me that we would say they're eating the pets of the people who live there." And he went on in that vein and was curious to know what we thought. And needless to say, being Ross and me, we had a lot of thoughts.
And it was interesting because, first of all, I want to throw one thing out. We said something incorrect in our answer back, technically incorrect. This is getting persnickety. But I noticed it and I said, oh my gosh. We said, actually, either form is correct, that or who. Yes, who sounds more correct, but it's grammatically legal for people to say that.
What is wrong with that sentence?
What is wrong with what we said in that sentence? We're doing a little furbelow, as we always say. We're talking about grammar here. This is not a question of grammar. Grammar refers to usage, technically. I mean, it does not refer to usage. Mm-hmm. Grammar technically refers to syntax, how you put words together, and inflection, how you change the words.
So
this
we
is a
said,
matter, yeah, usagely legal.
That's what I was just going to say, which is grammatically incorrect, is it not? Or is it saying usagely? Now I'm confused.
Yeah. So let's further on this confusion. Actually, in terms of usage, it is generally seen as correct to say either that or who for people, even though most people, and I'm one of them, do not like saying that for people. Mm-hmm. Kathy doesn't mind it, do you, Kathy?
You know me, I'm a very laissez-faire kind of gal. I'm whatever, you know. What about you, Fletcher? I'm curious, that or who?
I definitely prefer who, because I think I've mentioned this before, but it just feels like it actually acknowledges somebody's humanity instead of treating them like an object.
I guess that but in this case, the people that live there, I don't know. I have no problem with that. I have problems with what he was talking about, but I have no problem with that particular part of the phrase, the people that live there. I really don't.
Someone said, I thought it was really, she felt it was using that as fine, but it's not good manners. And I tend to sort of feel that way,
I mean, that's pretty much how I feel, yeah.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way as robbing some of humanity. I just thought people was a chunk, so it seemed okay.
But the interesting thing is we talked about that with pets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think to some degree you might use who with pets, giving them a little bit. It's not even humanity as much as just conscious.
You don't have pets. You don't have pets for us, but I'm thinking with ours, I think I do 50-50. I think I sometimes say who, and I sometimes say that. And I think it's dependent on what they're doing. If they're bad, it's that.
Yeah.
What has that cat done? I mean, in effect, but not that form.
I am sure that I would say who about my cat. I would probably say who about someone else's cat, unless I didn't like it. I wonder if I would say that if I were talking about someone else's iguana.
Iguana is a good choice.
I don't have a who with an iguana.
I don't have a problem with who with
an iguana. So we're going to get letters from iguana lovers, guys. Sorry to everybody. They're important animals, and I'm sure that they're quite lovely as pets.
Okay. Let's go down the totem pole, then. Your pet amoeba.
Well, okay, now fish. I don't think I ever thought of a fish as a who.
Oh, I disagree with you. Because Alex, when our son had fish before he had other pets, and I don't know, the fish, like, we had Big Guy, he was a big goldfish, and he had a real personality, I have to say. But all this being said, or all that being said, I think we're all in agreement. It's okay. Many of us, including Fletcher and me, prefer who for people. Others, less usagely inclined.
I think that we should include usage under grammar, too, if I want to really start a bun fight here. I'm all for expanding.
I think in terms of usage, it is expanding. I think we now really do tend to say it.
Yeah.
I think we did. You and I did, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. No, I know, and I think we should.
We do use the word grammar. I mean, the grammar umbrella is much larger than it used to be.
Yeah, it used to be a parasol. Now it's like a golf umbrella.
Right.
Right. Well said.
Thank you.
This, I guess, is one of those mistakes that isn't actually a mistake, right? We have a lot of these in English, and we've talked about a number of them from time to time.
Well, what a nice, neat way of leading into the topic du jour. Things we think are wrong, but aren't.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before. We've talked about ending sentences with a preposition, fine. Splitting infinitives, fine. So now we're boldly going where we haven't gone before. These are examples of other things that people think are wrong and will correct you about, but they're really not wrong.
And it looks like we're starting with at least a place we have boldly gone before once or twice, because I knew how to do these, but I didn't really know what they were called or why they went one way or the other. So we're going to talk about restrictive clauses. I'll read two sentences here that Kathy has sent me. The first is, the chapter which was about restrictive clauses was complicated. The second sentence is, the chapter that was about restrictive clauses was complicated.
There are two different meanings to this sentence, technically.
Correct.
And then we're going to tell you it doesn't matter at all. But before we go into that.
You've just ruined it, Ross.
Well, okay, so the first sentence, the chapter which was about restrictive clauses was complicated. Basically, this one is saying that the chapter was complicated. Oh, yeah, and also it was about restrictive clauses. That's not really important that it was about restrictive clauses.
Right.
The second sentence, the chapter that was about restrictive clauses was complicated, says this: the chapter specifically about restrictive clauses was a complicated one.
You got it perfectly. The idea basically is when the clause is necessary to the whole deal, you use that.
And so that is the restrictive one. It's restricted to cases in which...
Yeah, basically, the dog that bit me is here. The key aspect here is the dog that bit me is here.
Right.
If I go, the dog which bit me is here, it's yes, the dog is here. Incidentally, it bit me.
Right.
You had it perfectly correct.
Okay.
And this is one of those rules that that came about by Fowler in modern English usage. But he didn't say it's a rule. He said it'd be a good idea if they did this.
Hmm.
And I guess it would be a good idea, but no one does it, including
me. I was just going to say, Ross and I must. This is one thing that copy editors always get us on, the which and the that. They do.
Yes.
You've got to admit it, Ross.
Be careful about what you say. Don't say no one, because I do this, and I stick to it as much as I possibly can.
Well, you are better than we.
Yes, that's right.
Because technically, and we're going now, is this a grammar or usage crime? No, it is not considered such. In spite of everything that we've been talking about, in spite of everything everybody said, the belief now is it's not really huge after all.
No, but it never was. I mean, Fowler just recommended it. And then people took that and ran with it. But it was never even... originally stated as a rule. It was stated as a useful idea. Then people started thinking, gee, it's a good rule. So, and there was one interesting indication we got here. Jacques Barzun, who wrote
just
a book
say
saying,
that one. Yeah.
We should avoid witches. And then Merriam-Webster pointed out in the very next page, he broke his own rule. Mm-hmm. Next is a typical situation which a practice writer corrects for style. And that is not witch. That is that.
Right.
But, you know, but he blew it. And I think it's easy to blow. But Fletcher, apparently you're better than we are on this one.
Well, I just think that, I mean, it can sometimes introduce some ambiguity if you're not mm-hmm. careful. Not all the time, and probably not even that often, but it can. And so I try to be careful about it.
And that's interesting. You're taking exactly Fowler's point of view, which is, I'm not going to have a fit about it, but hey, why don't we do this when it's useful? Which is great.
Yeah, he thought it made things clearer. Yeah.
And it does, in that sense.
I am also going to change it if I'm copy editing somebody.
Well, so do our copy editors.
Yes.
Bless their hearts.
You're not from the South, Kathy. I guess your mother was, wasn't she?
You're right. I'm just channeling mom right there, okay?
Let's just go through a quick row of let's not even send Fletcher these. We'll just read them to you. These are you're going to know. These are, again, usage instances where we have some problems with it, but other people now are changing. If I say I'm amused by the joke, or I say I was bemused yesterday by the joke, are they both correct or incorrect, or what's the difference?
Well, it depends on what somebody's saying.
Well, that's true. It was a good joke.
The joke amused me. The joke bemused me.
No, bemused is wrong, and I will brook no dissent on this.
I actually agree with you, but no, nowadays there are that nowadays bemused, as we've said before, amused has become a definition, I believe the third most often, of bemused. And I find that very irritating.
That's horrifying. Frankly, that's horrifying. I hate it.
I agree. I don't like it either.
But everybody else disagrees. Because to me, bemused was just a fancy way I think, people using it, of saying amused. I mean, amused is the word. That's the word. It means amused.
Yeah.
Why do you need another word
that sounds almost the same?
Actually, it sort of annoys me on word origins, too. Because the is in a way away from. The muse is you know, the thought. And the amused is moving away from that thought. You're basically not there already, you know, because it's so funny. You're not thinking. You're entertained.
I like that.
Bemused is like focusing in on the thought. And that's indeed what the definition originally was. It was someone really thinking about something. And then amused is someone not thinking about it because they're laughing.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, that seems to be the idea. And I think that's a good one.
Yeah, that's really nice. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I that's one that everybody accepts, but I'm against it. I'm against it, too.
I'm really against it, and it's really becoming common now. I hear it all
God,
the time.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As a fancy amused, you know?
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's like when people use discreet spelled incorrectly to mean discreet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't get me started on that one. Okay, next is such as versus like.
Oh, sure. This is one. I hate these, but this is one that I never really thought about until I think we talked about it here on the show quite some time back. And ever since then, I notice it all the time and I change it. And I kind of hate myself for it because I'd prefer to go back just to ignorance. So
the good old days.
So the idea is you say something such as states that have not expanded Medicaid like Kansas. Right. Mm-hmm. Or you could say states that have not expanded Medicaid, such as Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is you ought to say such as if you're actually including Kansas. Mm-hmm. And if you're saying like, then what you're saying is there are states similar to Kansas. Right?
Precisely.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You got it. I don't like that distinction anymore. I switched and they now say you can do them interchangeably. And I tend to agree because guess what I do? I use them interchangeably.
Yeah, that one is, I really agree with you, even though I change it in scripts now, I change it to such as, although a part of that is because I don't want to get phone calls from nasty mm-hmm. pedants who think that they're right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there is this distinction. Fletcher likes films like Bridge on the River Kwai, Now, mm-hmm. I mean, that could mean that he—that doesn't mean he necessarily likes Bridge on the River Kwai, if we say like.
Right.
I said, but that, yeah, that's like so nitpicky, don't you think? I mean, that's really splitting a hair.
Yeah, the thing is, nobody really means that. Like, when people say,
no.
When people say, I like films like Bridge on the River Kwai, they mean they also like Bridge on the River Kwai.
I agree with you.
Others like it, yeah.
I agree with you, but technically, it doesn't have to be. But to me, that's where we get into the ridiculousness of that, or the... I just, you know, like you just said, in terms of real people talking, I get it completely when you say like or just as, you know, such as.
Yeah, in technical terms, there could be ambiguity, but in realistic terms, there never is. Mm-hmm. Unlike Witch and That.
Yeah, like in real life,
right.
You know, but, yeah. where
but
we
that,
live.
That's different from Witch and That for me, because there actually can be ambiguity with restrictive clauses.
Yeah.
I think you're right, but I just hate thinking about them. So I'm happy with the blur. That's one where I'm like going with the blur.
That
I
is,
really am.
That is totally fair.
For years, I would get it confused. I'd be like, which one is which? You know what I mean? And so someone said sandwich is a good way to remember, but then I forgot the... that's
the
a good
mnemonic?
Idea.
I was going to say, what's the sands? I don't understand.
No, I'll tell you the truth. We were talking about this, and last night I woke up and I think it was 3 o'clock.
Do you know what? This happens to me a lot, too. I just wake up in the middle of the night, and I think, sandwich.
It's kind of like Rosebud, but a little less catchy.
But as we were speaking, I was quickly looking it up, like, where did I get that? What were they talking about?
Oh, Ross, now I want you to find out what sandwich means. I'm like, really gripped.
Oh, here it is. I just found it. Okay. Because non-restrictive clauses add removable information.
Oh, it's like the, easy the to filling.
It's easy to remember to use which if you think of the paper that a sandwich comes wrapped in. So it
paper.
Is disposable.
That's a bridge too far. Okay.
That's what I'm reading you what they said.
I don't get this paper. Why is the paper around the sandwich? I make a sandwich, there's no paper.
Yeah, you know what? I'm with Kathy. It's like you can take the tomato off, I guess, if you want, or you can take the lettuce off.
That's better. I agree.
The next one I'm not convinced on. Okay. Is it wrong to use liable, or that's what they say, to mean likely to? I'm liable to make a mistake. I'm liable to think about sandwiches.
Oh.
I'm likely to think about sandwiches.
Oh, I don't know that I would use it, but I would not think much if somebody did use liable in that sense.
Me too.
Me too. I don't like it. I would say more likely. Likely, actually.
Yeah, I probably would, but you know. If somebody said, you know, he's liable. No, you know what? I might even say it. He's liable to throw a fit.
I would say liable more than I would say likely. I would write likely more than I'd say liable. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I think so.
That does make sense.
I think I would say I'm rather predisposed to doing this.
Yeah.
Wait, let's talk about that one for a second, though, because I guess I probably would have just assumed that it was another definition of liable. How did that happen? And it's not just a different definition for that sound?
Well, it is allowable.
Yeah.
Let's just first start with that. You can do it. But liable means like open to, capable, whereas likely is much more of a probability.
Okay, I was going to add the earlier definition to that. Liable originally, it comes from the French, lier. Which obviously comes from the Latin ligare, which means to bind or tie. And it basically the idea is you're bound by law to do this.
Legally accountable.
Legally you have to do it. So, I mean, you can see how it drifted into, you know, I'm liable to say this because I'm bound to say this, not by law in this case, but you got rid of the law part and then it just became general.
Yeah.
So you can see how it drifted into meaning. But the original meaning and it would be bound by law. You are liable, you know, to be prosecuted.
Just interesting to me, though, when you said bound to, I never use that. I never say I'm bound to do that. That's sort of a colloquialism that's not certainly from New Jersey, New York. I don't think. I don't know. I never used it. But you do say bound to, not meaning legally bound, but I'm bound to do that. Yeah, I'm bound to be going to, I don't know.
Yeah, to bind. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which is interesting. I never thought about it, you know?
I didn't until you said it. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone has any problem with libel anymore. I doubt it. And the classic definition of Merriam-Webster has it as a second definition. No one seems to really have problems with it anymore.
Although there are nitpickers who don't like it.
Well, I'm liable to toss them out the window. Defenestrate.
Hopefully, you won't defenestrate them.
Hopefully.
Which
oh,
is the next.
We're moving on to hopefully.
Obvious
yeah.
one, yeah.
Explain this one, will you, again? Because I can never quite wrap my head around what people have a problem with on hopefully.
Technically, and this is where people have an issue with using hopefully, we just use it hopefully, as in it's hope that you get everything right. Technically, hopefully would mean or has meaned like filled with hope, optimistically. Fletcher hopefully did this. Fletcher with a great deal of hope did this.
So I am full of hope. That's when you should use hopefully.
Yes.
Theoretically, that's when people get all snitty about it and go, ew.
But the new thing is hopefully is an adverb that modifies the entire sentence.
Okay.
Hopefully, Fletcher will get every answer right. So, I mean, we all understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous not to understand that or say that's wrong. Everyone says it.
Yep.
It's funny, though. I'm clicking around, and there's some site I won't mention. Common mistake word order, hopefully starting a sentence. But their caveat is, it is worth noting there are occasions where starting a sentence with hopefully is acceptable.
Come on.
However, it is important to use this sparingly. It's like, really?
Well, that's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
It's
just silly.
Yeah.
That's not how we do things anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but it's certainly not now.
No. I use it constantly. Well, not constantly. I'm not that.
Hopefully
anyway.
You use it sparingly, Kathy.
Yes.
And appropriately.
Okay, the next one we have is here. He made an oral argument. He made a verbal argument.
I have never heard anybody say he made a verbal argument. But, I mean, oral means he said it out loud, and verbal means it was done with words. Which I suppose could be out loud or written down.
Yeah, what's happening now is verbal is being now said to mean oral.
Oh, really?
Basically.
Oh, wow. I haven't noticed that at all.
And there was a really interesting thing. I just looked at it, actually. It's a law firm talking about the dangers. And this, in one case, it really makes a distinction, a verbal contract and an oral contract. And, you know, when you get someone suing someone else, they're going to get you on something. Mm-hmm. And the key thing is to really make the distinction. They're saying there, an oral contract is an oral contract. It's unwritten. It's hard to prove. So I think that really is, it's not important to us outside legality, but in the legal world, I think you better be darn sure
that's always so, isn't it though? Because we found so many examples of things that we would all use happily, but when it's legal, it's a very different animal,
mm-hmm.
which is why they get paid so much.
But I think the distinction is really, I like the distinction, actually. What do you think, Fletcher?
Well, considering I haven't really noticed people saying verbal when they mean oral, I mean, it must be all over the place if you're bringing it up, but mm-hmm. since I hadn't noticed it, I do like the distinction. I mean, say oral when you mean you said it out loud. It's not that hard.
I don't know, but I don't see what's the problem with saying verbal as in anything expressed in words, whether it's written or spoken. Although then what is an art? Wait a second.
I'm just going to say
really,
that. What's a non-verbal
philosophical
argument?
Yeah, no. Well,
I mean,
I guess
you
like punching
someone.
Yeah. But I mean, how often then do you refer to it, like pretty it up and say a non-verbal argument, i.e. he smashed his nose? I don't know. Yeah, I think actually you're allowed to, nowadays you're allowed, it's blurred, but I agree with you guys, and I'm usually much more vague. I think verbal should mean talk, not talk, oral talk.
And the next one, I could care less about this argument.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less. This one drives me up the wall. I can't help it.
So, this one drives me up the wall too, but only because of my own personal reaction to it. Like, I don't like caring about it.
Mm-hmm. You couldn't care less.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I mean, when you really think about it, you should probably say, I couldn't care less.
Right.
Which is what I say. And I'll also acknowledge that it causes me internal problems when I hear people say, I could care less. But the thing mm-hmm. is, I mean, that's like an idiomatic phrase, basically, right? I could care
mm-hmm.
less.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like,
yeah,
so like,
exactly.
It's fine. And when you literally think about it, it's not correct. fine. But it's an idiomatic phrase, and it shouldn't bother me.
It's a the OED calls it a colloquialism in America.
And you got it right for me too. I don't think I really should care, but I do when I hear it.
But you guys, think about it. To me, we go back to it, because I know my big thing is intonation. You go, yeah, I could really care less.
Yeah, you understand it.
Yeah, we understand it.
But it's sarcastic. I don't see why there's any... Why are you guys getting so upset about it?
I see what you're saying. You're saying... But it does. I mean, it means that you could even care less.
Yeah,
than that.
It means that you could literally care less. Like,
no. See, I disagree. I think they're saying I couldn't care less at all.
Well,
it's
that's
so
the thing.
Beneath
they
me.
Are.
Yeah,
you
like,
are. They are. That's why when I say something cost me an arm and a leg, I don't literally mean it cost me an arm and a leg. But that doesn't bother me if somebody says that. So why should it bother me that this colloquial phrase, this idiomatic expression, I could care less, why should that bother me? I don't know, but it does.
I'm in agreement with you, Fletcher. I hear it, and I understand it completely, instantly, and then I go, it really should be.
Right.
It's stupid. You guys.
Because it completely means, it means what it means either way, and we know it.
Yeah. It's fine. Everybody use it if you want. Whatever happens to me inside is my problem.
Realize now, Fletcher, I'm going to try to work this in every episode.
And the funny thing is, Fletcher, it really causes us even more agita because we go through it, we hear it, we go, that's not really right. Then we go, what's wrong with me for thinking it's not really right?
People have no idea what's going on inside here when they say that.
I know. So it's really bad for us.
Okay, so does it literally make your heads explode?
Oh, we've gone through this.
I know. I had to throw it in, though. They still are saying it's fine.
Yeah.
So get used to it, boys.
Well, we are, I suppose, going to have to get used to it, or else we'll just go to our graves kicking and screaming, which is probably what will happen to me, because I'm not okay with using literally when you don't literally mean literally.
Mm-hmm.
But people do it. And by and large, you do know when people are speaking figuratively and when they're not. He was literally on fire. No, he wasn't.
Yeah.
But
it's really an intensifier, actually.
But again, and even more so than with the restrictive clauses, this can introduce ambiguity and real ambiguity where we're not communicating.
However, I just want to point out F. Scott Fitzgerald used it. Dickens used it. Thackeray, James Joyce, who I cannot abide, but that's beside the point. Shakespeare, so they used it.
Yeah, and and I would have had problems with that too.
Neither of you sounds very convinced.
Yeah, so, but that one always gets me because we do it to ourselves. We trot in a couple of writers who do this or that, and Fletcher had it right. Like, okay, they're wrong too. You know, so what?
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.